You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, it's your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Monday, the 12th of May 2025. The Australian share market opened strongly, but only rose by the close by 2 points. We'll have the details with Nick Schoenmaker, a client portfolio manager at Drummond Capital Partners. But first, I want to talk about Woolworths because it's investing around $100 million to cut prices, reducing what it's called lower shelf prices, which basically means the base price of around 400 products by about 10%, and mainly on its home brand. So for more, I spoke with Gary Mortimer, a professor at Queensland University. Gary, so Woolies is cutting the price of almost 400 items by around 10% on average. Why are they doing it?
Yeah, listen, this looks like it's about getting back to price consistency, everyday low prices. We know that shoppers tend to be drawn to those retailers that can deliver consistency in pricing, just helps families budget over a long period of time. Looks like these prices will stay the same level for the next 6 months at least.
Can they afford to do it? Because from my understanding too, reading a few analyst notes, Woolies sales have been growing at a slower pace than that of Coles, first of all. And also, there's been a lot of scrutiny on supermarkets and supermarket prices over the past year, right?
Yeah, listen, I think probably one of the reasons that they are focused on delivering these price cuts is the price comparison with Coles. Coles obviously in the marketplace appearing to be more sensitive to prices, better on a price position. Woolworths now responding to that, delivering lower prices for shoppers. In relation to those inquiries, you're quite correct, 8 inquiries, although what's really interesting in all of those, no evidence of price gouging was found.
So finally, I guess the key question is, if Woolies says it's cutting the price of 400 basically staples, right, are we likely to see a new supermarket war? What will this mean for consumers? And if so, what kinds of products? Because I'll say this, Gary, I did reach out to Aldi, and Aldi told me that they're basically constantly reviewing their own prices and keeping an eye on what the competitor's doing. Still waiting to hear from Coles, but what do you think?
I don't think this will trigger a price war. These aren't significant discounts or price slashing. Some of these prices are as down as low as 10 cents, some closer to a dollar. What I think we will see is Coles responding, so price matching rather than a price war. I think we'll see the same thing play out with IJ and also Aldi, making sure that on these 400-odd lines, they're about the same price across the board.
And can I ask why you don't think there'll be a price war, just matching? Is it a function of cost?
Yeah, listen, I think price wars just aren't sustainable, certainly not in an environment where retailers are doing it tough with increasing costs of supply, costs of goods being sold, increasing costs of fuel and transportation, logistics costs. We aren't where we were back in 2001, where we started to see milk go down to $2 for 2 litres. I think this will be more stable and selective pricing.
It's Gary Mortimer there from Queensland University of Technology.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
So it was a good start to the week for the ASX 200, the market opening strongly, but then closing just 0.03% higher, or 2 points, 8,233. It was, though, a positive day, and for more on that, I spoke with Nick Schoenmaker, a client portfolio manager at Drummond Capital Partners. Nick, so it appears the market likes to move any time it hears something to do with the US-China trade dispute especially. That's what's happened at the moment. The White House saying the US announced a trade deal with China in Geneva, but there's no real solid details, yet the market rises. To what extent, though, do investors need to be wary about these types of announcements?
Yeah, I think it's a good point, Ricardo, and it's probably an extension of an existing theme in the markets for a few years now, which is this concept of narrative creep. So if you think about, we've been in really uncharted territory without Trump coming into tariffs just due to one of the most aggressive interest rate hiking cycles that we've had in history since 2022. And you've seen the US Federal Reserve and other central banks being increasingly data dependent. So that narrative creep, whether it's hard landing, soft landing, has shifted at any time there's a stronger or weaker non-farm payrolls or inflation print. And I guess that narrative creep has been exacerbated through Trump. So as you say, there was a constructive two-day long conversation in Switzerland. The actual details are absent. We're expecting to get more information later today. I think the key thing is that it does appear there'll be some kind of de-escalation. In terms of the detail of that and the work that we've done just over the weekend and today, thinking about where the effective tariff rate could land, despite Trump talking about 80% tariffs seeming kind of on point, just as the discussions were taking off over the weekend, we could see the tariff rate get down to below 50%. If we think about some of the kind of low-hanging fruit, I guess, you've got the fentanyl tariffs. They could pretty easily be rolled back, I think. They were 20%. We had the escalatory tariffs being 90%. If you took those two components out, you're left with, I guess you'd call it the inherited tariffs. They're about 10%, and reciprocal tariffs being about 35%. It's still very high and a lot higher than where we were before Trump 2.0, but it's more reasonable. We could think about China making some pretty easy concessions around rare earths and the export controls and quid pro quo the US around tech or semiconductor products. So I think from here, the markets have been very sanguine about tariffs ever since we had some of the rolling back of the levies on April 9. But we've still got a long way to go. So I think from here we'll see probably some more announcements today of scheduled discussions between China. And the US has announced that there is a kind of shorter list of 20-odd partners that they're focusing on now. It does include Australia. It includes other major export competitors like Japan and South Korea, who do have very competitive currencies versus the US dollar. So I think one of the things to really kind of, I think, summarise your question is that the market seems to be in this bit of buy the expectation, sell the fact. So I think when we do get concrete details on trade deals, if they are made, that you might start to see the market soften against that. And I think we've seen today with just on the local market, like, you know, Clarity Pharmaceuticals was down about 8%. So we've seen Trump make some posts over the weekend about prescription drugs coming down 30 or 80%. So a bit of the buy the rumor, sell the fact, I think, Ricardo.
Still, can you run us through how else it's translating to markets? Because we've seen oil for a while there was reaching multi-year lows. Now it's bounced up again, and the Australian dollar's a bit higher too, right?
Yeah, that's right. So I guess, again, on that kind of same theme of it's a bit of a short-term boost to the bullish sentiment that we've had since April 9th. I think the rally could be kind of teetering on its upper limits. So, you know, I mentioned investors being very sanguine about the whole trade tariff restructuring of supply chains ever since April 9. For us to really see, I guess, an extended kind of bull shift, I think some of the catalysts for that, you'd need to see a really concrete China deal. And US consumer surveys and business surveys as well have been very weak this year. And, you know, Drummond's proprietary growth barometer picked that up very early in the year. We've got the US Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey later this week. So we should see what consumer strength has been doing. But to get, you know, this ongoing kind of bullish sentiment, which has been going since April 9, I think a really concrete China deal. I think we're some way away from that. And consumer strength would be important if you think about the oil price. So as you said, that's had a lot of weakness this year. You've had concerns around recessions. You've had that kind of, I think was quite unexpected, OPEC plus supply increase, given the deficit that Saudi Arabia runs. And we've seen the energy sector on the ASX down about 15% this year. I think the boost that we've seen today on the local market with energy and iron ore mining stocks has just been around some exuberance that the tariffs on China could be less prohibitive. In terms of the Australian dollar, look, it is a risk on currency. Currencies have been a really strong transmission mechanism for some of the political risks that we've seen since Trump got in. If you think about, what, I mean, about 4 months ago now, when tariffs were first talked about with Canada and Mexico, we saw big movements up and down with the Canadian Mexican currencies. We saw just last week the Taiwanese dollar had a historic surge. I think it was like 10% in 2 days. In terms of the Australian dollar, I think we could expect some bullish behaviour over time. And if you look at the US dollar, which has been very weak this year, that's helped the Australian dollar, it tends to move in very long-term cycles. And if we think about other times where we've had real inflections in trade, go back to 1985, the Plaza Accords, The US dollar declined, I think it was over 15% in about a 10 to 15 year period. So I think just a bit of a short-term bullish risk on sentiment, but much to play out. And I think we can, after a very long period of US dollar strength, expect now, given the twin deficits in the US, deficit related to trade and fiscal, that we might be in for an extended period of softer US dollar performance.
Okay, and finally, given the volatility that we are still seeing on the markets, what are you telling your clients at the moment, and are there any opportunities for investors?
Yeah, look, I think the main thing Ricardo would say is that there's still plenty to play out for this market. The global trade war, I think it's safe to say, is far from coming to an end. Equities are priced in a lot of good news since April 9. There is still big risks about how the new global order will look under, I guess, a major regime change. There are always opportunities, and one of the things that we do at Drummond is tactical asset allocation. So we tend to do quite well when there is these big changes in market leadership. 2020 through the COVID market malaise would be a case in point. We did quite well, up about 4% of our benchmark that year. So we look in macro-driven markets, and I think we've got another kind of 10 years or so of really macro-driven markets. Tactical asset allocations extremely important. I think you've got to be very flexible to that kind of narrative creep that I mentioned before. And I think one thing that we've got to really consider and reflect on, you know, we talked about some of the catalysts for the bull case being a China trade deal, consumer sentiment in the US, which has driven their positive growth for the last few years. If we think about the bear case, you know, one of the consequences of having a big trade deficit, with which the US does, is that it means that there's a lot of money going into US assets. And I think it's close to $600 billion in USD terms over the last 5 years that have gone to US assets. If you've got tariffs causing higher inflation, and now we may be in this structural period of a US dollar decline, you have funding costs which could go up. And with the debt of the US government being $34 odd trillion dollars, if you get that US 10-year bond yield, which I think is about 4.4% now, getting to 5% and staying sustainably above 5%, you may get a substantial buyer's strike to Treasury bonds. So I think that's kind of the key risk we need to look at. But for now, I would say, given investors have been quite sanguine to the very big geopolitical playbook that we've got now, there's still some room for caution.
That is Nick Schoonaker there from Drummond Capital Partners.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.